good stuff. Thanks for the questions as well. I think a really great sign that we've really been engaging with the teaching. And thank you, Charlie, so much for the talks. First little bunch of questions here, partly about the historical certainty of some of these events you've talked about. So obviously Old Testament, some of the dates, length of time some of these guys lived for, length of the earth. Say something about historical certainty when we come to the Old Testament.
Yeah, thank you. So one of them is someone saying, well, what would you do when you just don't really believe it? I think I'd say focus on the pivot of history. So focus on the resurrection of Jesus, on his life, on who he was. That's where both ends of the Bible point to. So Old Testament, New Testament point to Jesus as the moment to make your decisions about God on, for whom there is lots of historical evidence. It's very straightforward, actually, to start finding out about him, deciding who do you think he was. The reason I think the Old Testament is true is because Jesus says it was. That's the central reason. If he's God, he should know what he's talking about. He says the Old Testament's true. So I think start with him. There is a certain amount of historical checking you can do about the Old Testament. And the British Museum is a great place to start because the British Empire plundered all the right places and brought all the stuff back. So the further you go back in history, the harder it is to corroborate and check documentary sources because more has been destroyed, less has survived. We're talking about a nation state, well, for some of its history, quite a minor nation state, and for lots of its history, just a kind of wandering group of shepherds and their family. So, again, you wouldn't expect to find lots. It's the period when Israel and Judah are kingdoms that interact with other major empires. That's the period we have most corroboration from, as you'd expect. So you can go to the British Museum and see the King of Israel bowing down to the Emperor of Assyria on a big pyramid, on a big, obelisk. We know about him from the Bible. It's that sort of thing you can do to check. Literal stuff in the Bible, it basically it's a question of genre. So Jesus says the Bible is true, which means true in everything it is trying to say. So when Jesus says that Herod is a cunning fox, he doesn't mean that Herod the king actually has a bushy red tail. It's just a rubbish. So you need to get the genre right. So, for instance, Titus, we've been doing, says that Cretans are always liars. People with the wrong kind of degree get very excited about that because a Cretan says that Cretans are always liars. Ooh, logic, paradox. Is it true that everyone in Crete has always been a liar? So it's a question of genre. What type of literature is it? Is it a poem? Is it historical? Is it? And I think particularly with things like numbers, as in particularly bigger numbers, we just need to check that we've actually understood it properly. So there can be approximations. Genesis 17 verse 1 says Abraham is 99. He then in chat with his wife talks about himself being 100. That's a perfectly normal approximation. Or big numbers, like the Exodus generation that leave Exodus, we're told in Numbers that they are 400 somethings and uses the word that often means 1,000. So if there are 400,000 men, they've done kind of studies working out how long it would take, you know, 1 million people to walk across the desert or through some water. So you think, and actually how long it would take for them, how much food they'd need, that sort of thing. So he thinks probably we don't understand quite what that word for 1,000 means, which will also affect some of the ages of people, that sort of thing. So just read carefully on the genre that we've got.
Thank you. Why do we need a prototype rather than just going straight to Jesus?
Yeah, thank you. Again, I think we would have just gone, right, problem, solution. The Bible gives lots of different answers. Things like, so we would understand what Jesus is about when he comes. And I think by understanding, the Bible doesn't just mean what you can learn in 5 minutes by telling you something. It means actually really lived understanding. So for instance, we get 1,000 years of, let's see how good you can be. 1,000 years of, keep the law of Moses and you'll be okay, as a very, very thorough worked example, tested to destruction, proving the point, I cannot do it. There is no way we can do that. You get the blood of the sacrifices again and again and again. Hebrews tells us to teach us how bad sin is, how much we need a perfect sacrifice. Look at all these dead goats. We really need something to deal with sin. Look how often we have to do it. Look how sinful I am. And it's things like that, big demonstrations of big lessons so that we really understand them. Mm. And I think, again, we wouldn't have done it quite like that. We need to trust God's timing to have done things in the right way.
Yeah, thank you. A whole bunch of questions on how we take Old Testament law and regulations through the pinch. Yeah. Some specific ones on homosexuality, which we can probably leave because we're going to cover that in 2 weeks on Sunday evening. Do give those flyers to your buddies for that series. But general questions on why do Christians seem to take some of the Ten Commandments now but not others? What's the work we have to do on the pinch?
Yep, thank you. I think it's an excellent question. I think some Christians are doing exactly that. Are kind of saying, yeah, we need to obey the whole Old Testament law, but actually really just picking and choosing which ones. I think what we have to say is we have to take all of it through the pinch and see what happens the other side. So it's quite straightforward, isn't it, really, in some ways, in that we are not Israel. We're not ancient Israel in their situation. And so just like with everything we've done with David and Goliath or whatever, it will apply differently to us. So a whole section of the laws, the stuff about armies and warfare capturing people in battle and law courts and things like that, that we are just not in the same situation as them. There's other stuff that clearly doesn't come out of the pinch at all, like how to sacrifice animals. So the cross of Jesus has entirely fulfilled all of that. We no longer need to sacrifice animals. Arguably, there's a whole load of stuff about purity that does the same thing. That actually we now have, Titus 1:15, we are now entirely pure. We don't need to focus on the Jewish purity laws anymore. There's some that Jesus deals with explicitly. You used to have to eat only certain foods. Jesus now declares all foods clean. So I think, again, particularly if your friend is asking you that question about homosexuality and expecting you to be kind of embarrassed about, oh, you're right, I don't keep all the law. Mm-hmm. It's just very straightforward. Christians, ever since Jesus, have been saying the law has changed. Our situation has changed. Which doesn't mean it isn't good to read. So an example someone once said to me was, imagine that you are a child who grows up with an Eskimo family in Greenland. And your mother says, never go out of the house without wearing a coat. And that is good advice. And then you move to the Caribbean. Every time you leave the house, you remember what your mother used to say to you. But what you don't do is go and put on a coat, because that would be very stupid. But you remember, okay, in that situation, my mother loved me. My mother wanted me to be adequately dressed for the situation. Is that sort of work? What does it mean for us in our situation to put into practice the principles there in the law? Mm. What do we learn about God and his care for them? God and his standards? And sometimes that is not straightforward. And I think it'd be a shame to pretend, Christians sometimes pretend that's just very easy. But what we do have is the New Testament, and in particular the moral teaching of the New Testament, to guide us in the things that are important. So it's interesting, for instance, 9 of the Ten Commandments are reiterated in the New Testament. And so it's really clear that Christians now, at least those 9, need to obey them in much the same way as they did then. Mm. So not everything has changed. And actually, so on homosexuality, I wouldn't go to the law to try and make that point. I'd go to the New Testament and say, what does Jesus teach about sex? Rather than the Old Testament.
Good. Some of these questions, sorry we won't get to answer them all, grab Charlie over lunch. One about how we see our situations similar to that of biblical characters. I hope the first session today might have helped with that. And a question about how evangelism and social justice stuff fit together. I think I might refer us to your talk from last Sunday night on that, Charlie, which Titus 3, Charlie, talked about.
Again, we need to look at what the New Testament does with the Old Testament.
Yeah.
So release the prisoners. Look after the people in the area. What does the New Testament do? It says teach the gospel. So Luke opens, Luke 4, with Jesus saying that promise about the good news for the poor, I am doing that now. What does he actually do? He preaches the gospel. That's the good news for the poor.
Yeah, I think we'll do some more work on that issue together as a church, because I think it's a really, really important one for us to be clear on. 2 more questions. Charlie, if the Spirit is in us, and we are the temple, why do we still sin? And similar to that, why do we not seem any better than the Israelites?
Yeah, I think it's a really, really good question. There was one there as well, I think, about, which we're not going to do, but about what do we learn from the failure bits of the Old Testament. And it's actually, in some ways, it's really encouraging to keep meeting people in the Bible just like us, isn't it? Who go wrong in all the ways we do. And what's interesting is the New Testament expects that to continue. So disciples who are failures, Paul talking like Romans 7 about his struggles with sin, Galatians 5 about there being a fight going on inside us. But I think the question's a really good one, because we have to say that we are in a different situation from them. So Acts 2, we have the Spirit. Acts 4, we can pray and be filled with the Spirit. John 14 to 16 says that it is good that Jesus has gone away so that the Spirit can come. But I think that's where the drawing helps us, just getting our expectations realistic. Our bodies of sin are just the same as the people in the Old Testament. You have God's Spirit. In some ways, actually, it's worse when we're just like them. So 1 Corinthians, Hebrews teaches that. You know, if they got in loads of trouble when they turned their back on the message brought to them by Moses and the angels, how much worse when we turn our backs, harden our hearts, because we have the Spirit of the living God living in us. How much worse if we head into sin when we take the Spirit with us in our hearts? So yeah, I think I agree with the question that we are differently empowered. We have a different degree of closeness to God, and that means we ought to, that ought to kind of keep encouraging us to battle with the sin in our sinful bodies.
Yeah. And we'll see some of that temple language in the Good Sex, Bad Sex series in 1 Corinthians, as we see this language of temple apply to what that means for us sexually. Final question, how do we know it won't go wrong again?
Yeah, thank you. So that is, that's a great question, isn't it? As you look at Revelation 21, 22, why won't it go wrong again? I think two things to say. One is that it, in a sense, it didn't go wrong in the first place. Do you see, really, that's a suffering question. Why did God allow all of this that's happened in history? How can it be worth the pain and suffering? Why not just finish it sooner? Why not just stop it going wrong in the first place? Because places like Ephesians 1 is very clear that the death of Jesus was not plan B. It was not a reaction to something that had gone wrong. It was the plan before the world was created. So actually, it didn't go wrong. You had a world that God always intended to perfect through suffering, rebellion, and sin, through the death of his son, so that there would be redeemed people in the new creation. That again, God thinks about what's worth doing slightly differently to we do. I think always while we're alive in this world, we will think that any sort of suffering is not worth anything that comes out of it. Make it stop. Is, I think, our always normal reaction. But God, so John 11 would be a good place to go, where Jesus allows his friend to die to achieve people believing in him, the glory of God being revealed, the faith of the sisters being strengthened. God thinks things like that are worth the story. So yeah, it didn't go wrong. So it's not like God was caught out. And we will be different in the new creation, different from Adam and Eve. So where 1 Corinthians 15 would be a good place to go for that. Whereas Adam had a body of flesh with a soul, Jesus is spirit-filled and will create new-bodied people with the Spirit in them, who are glorious, indestructible, incorruptible. So there is a change in human beings. We are what Adam was meant to turn into, and we will not be able to sin, which actually is the same as Jesus. Jesus is unable to sin. God is unable to sin, and he is going to give that to us. Yes, it can't go wrong.
I loved what you said about how we'll be such great friends in the new creation, because we won't sin against each other. That would be brilliant, won't it? Charlie, thanks so much for serving us so well. I think we're going to thank you officially at lunchtime, but we're going to sing a song as we finish. I love some of these heaven songs that we sing at church, and I think we can sing songs about heaven with even more confidence after a weekend like this, after truckloads of the faithfulness of God behind us, thousands of years of seeing him faithful to his promises. Let's stand and sing about our future.